Welcome to Torah from JTS, a weekly commentary from the Jewish Theological Seminary.
This week's commentary for Ki Teitzei was written by Rabbi Stephanie Ruske, Executive Director of the Hendel Center for Ethics and Justice and Associate Dean of the Rabbinical School at JTS. Who are we? The Jewish master narrative hinges on retelling our own story of being enslaved and freed by God to become a holy people. We tell this story repeatedly, and it is meant to wash over our souls and permeate our brains. Enslavement should feel real, as should the taste of freedom. What if you were a slave and had been able to escape? Would you have expected to find people who would help protect you, or people who would turn you in? If you had been the person to encounter a slave who fled, would you have protected them and become complicit in their escape, or followed local laws and returned them to their master? This is among the topics that Ki Teitzei invites us to consider, but with a clear direction. In Deuteronomy 23, 16 and 17, we learn, "Don't deliver a slave to his master if he seeks refuge with you. Rather, allow him to reside among you, wherever he chooses within any of your cities, where it is good for him. You shall not oppress him." This summer, as our country is reckoning with race and the 400-year legacy of slavery, I have been thinking a lot about Frederick Douglass. On September 3, 1838, Douglass, with significant help from his soon-to-be wife, Anna Murray Douglass, escaped from slavery, traveling north by train and steamship. He became active as an abolitionist and preacher, yet his freedom did not translate into love of country. In 1847, he wrote, "I have no love for America as such. I have no patriotism. I have no country. What country have I? The institutions of this country do not recognize me as a man." He had taken bold action to assert his own human dignity. But patriotism is more than an individual act of pride for one's country. It requires you to see yourself as part of the nation's project, and America at that time would not grant Douglass the full human experience of choosing to live as he wanted, and particularly where he wanted. Jewish text and tradition regularly challenge us and raise questions for today, but on the topics of the slave's transition to freedom and how to treat poor people, our texts offer a usable framework that doesn't require us to stretch. They inspire us towards righteousness. Not only do we learn to protect a slave who has escaped and to offer refuge, we also learn about prioritizing the dignity of those in our debt. We are told that when we go to collect the debt, we should wait outside, aiming to prevent the debtor from feeling any shame about their home, a feeling to which many of us can relate now when Zoom meetings show off our homes to everyone. If they've given us a coat as collateral for a loan, we are to return it to them each night in case they rely on it for warmth. We are to pay laborers on the day they do the work, not letting them languish and suffer as they await funds that are rightfully theirs. We don't collect all of our produce in the field, but leave some for anonymous hungry people who can wander in to retrieve it. And we use weights and measurements that are just, because anyone who is perpetuating injustice is an abomination to God. On these matters of justice, our instructions are clear. Yet, despite the Torah's clarity, I'm struck by the ways upholding these laws would not have been simple. Going back to our first example, I contemplate how a Jew would have made sense of the 1850 Fugitive Slave Act, which required slaves to be returned to their owners, regardless of whether you lived in a slave or free state. It even required the government to take responsibility for finding, returning, and trying escaped slaves. What would you have done if you encountered a slave who had escaped? As a Jew, your master's story reminded you daily you'd been enslaved and freed. But as a Jew, you also had a religious principle that we follow the law of the land, a law requiring you to return the slave. And what if you worked for the government and were doubly bound to seek out fugitives and return them? If you decided not to return the slave, how would you honor the second part of the obligation, to allow the now freed person to live wherever they wanted and to not oppress them? In the US, we are living through a period of reckoning with who we are as a nation, where we've come from, and where we are headed, and that means coping in a deep historical, ethical, and spiritual way with the issue of slavery. In 1865, the 13th Amendment officially abolished slavery, but in the years that followed, Black Americans really did not have the freedom to which the Torah inspires. They were limited by laws, policies, and practices that determined where they could live, if they could get credit to buy a home, and if they would feel welcomed. New regulations were regularly established to constrict their rights. This 4th of July, Many listened to Frederick Douglass's speech, What the Slave is the 4th of July, in which Douglass explains that it is not a day that symbolizes freedom for black people who were enslaved and did not receive independence in 1776. How, he asked, should black Americans engage with this day, the day of another people? It's important to realize that we are not yet done with this question of how and where a person who is formerly a slave can live in this country. The ethical quandary about returning a slave who had escaped is not limited to the past. Each 4th of July and every day in between, each of us makes choices that either advance or impede equity for all people, regardless of race. This summer, we mourned the loss of Congressman John Lewis, the great civil rights leader who worked tirelessly to ensure that inheritors of the legacy of slavery could live wherever they wanted and not be oppressed. As we each contend with how we will personally do our part to ensure that all people can live where they want, free from oppression, we would do well to remind ourselves of Congressman Lewis's favorite agitation to go out and make trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble. Without it, we will never fulfill the second part of the Torah's obligation to ensure that people with a familial history of slavery are able to choose where they live and live freely in all aspects of their lives. We may like to believe about ourselves that of course we would have protected the slave who had escaped, but we must also ask ourselves, what are we doing today? Because however we are personally grappling with and addressing racial injustice today is probably a lot like how we would have reacted then. May we be blessed to make good and necessary trouble that will allow us to tell our children and grandchildren that in this time of reckoning, we hope to ensure that freedom from oppression for all people is real.
If you enjoyed this program, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. And discover JTS's other series by visiting jtsa.edu/podcasts. To learn with JTS faculty in live online classes, visit jtsa.edu/online. And you can get in touch with us by emailing onlinelearning@jtsa.edu. Thanks for listening.